Good afternoon. You are tuned in to Into an Afternoon here for Wednesday, the 12th of October, the year 2016. Jeff Brown with you today. We'll be talking to Eric Simpson and Craig Dahl about the annual dinner for the Chamber of Commerce, A Night in Hollywood. Marianne Mills and Kim Andrew will be here to discuss Friday's League of Women Voters fundraising wine tasting. We'll find out about the upcoming World Affairs Council Forum on Human Migration and Refugees. And Reggie Schapp from Juno Jazz and Classics will be here to spotlight an upcoming string workshop. Pat Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More today on Juno Afternoon. The forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies with the lows around 32 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, mostly sunny with high temperatures near 48. Friday, mostly sunny with high temperatures near 45 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders from across the country are focusing on a number of issues facing their communities at the National Congress of American Indians Annual Convention. Discussions are taking place this week in Phoenix, Arizona. Local, state, and federal officials are among those examining issues with tribal leaders. National Congress of American Indians President Brian Cladsby says the gathering is an important part of advancing communities in Indian country.
This is what our elders dreamed of when they started this organization, that tribes from across the nation would be able to come together to network, work together, and to be able to have the opportunity to speak with our trustees and to let them hear our concerns. And so it's we're very blessed to be here in Phoenix.
Today's agenda includes tribal response to the national drug epidemic, creating policies for Native youth, workforce development, land buyback and trust reform, and elder care. The convention wraps up on Friday. The Indian Health Service is requesting tribal input on proposed realignment of the IHS headquarters. In an October letter to tribal leaders, IHS Principal Deputy Director Mary Smith announced the proposal and a 30-day open comment period for tribes. According to the agency, the realignment is intended to impact how headquarters operates and accomplishes its responsibilities with transparency. Proposals examine leadership roles, realignment, and creates a new associate director position for workforce development. IHS representatives held a session on the proposal this week at the National Congress of American Indians Convention. Comments will be accepted through November 5th. A school in Alaska is getting some relief from overcrowding after a shop area was converted into a classroom. KBBI's Daisha Eaton has more.
Nanwalek School Principal Nancy Klein says the new classroom for 6th through 12th graders has made students more comfortable and enthusiastic about learning.
We have a pretty large middle school group, 26 kids, and I believe there's 17 high school kids, and that room is so much more appropriate for them. They now have two large rooms, one downstairs and one upstairs.
Nanwalek is an Alutiiq Sukpiak community near the southern tip of the Kenai Peninsula. The school was built before statehood by the Bureau of Indian Affairs in 1958. There's been no expansion since an addition in 1977. But the population of Nanwalek has continued to grow. According to census data, Nanwalek's population has nearly doubled since the state started keeping track in 1990. Last year, the school was at 138% capacity. Until the Kenai Peninsula School District helped the school convert the garage shop into a classroom, students were packed into a building that's supposed to hold just 60. Klein says enrollment is up this year and that she expects continued growth. Klein says she's happy the district has found this temporary solution.
I'm actually really proud of everybody that's been involved and very excited for the kids that they can relax this year and not be crammed.
At this time, the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District has no plans to expand the school. I'm Daisha Eaton.
The Alutiiq Museum was honored this week by the Association of Tribal Archives, Libraries, and Museums. The Alaska nonprofit received the Institutional Excellence Award for its commitment to connecting people to the Alutiiq culture. The museum is located in Kodiak and is dedicated to preserving and sharing the history and culture of Alutiiq people. Museum Executive Director April Chancellor accepted the award at the Association of Tribal Archives, Libraries, and Museums International Conference taking place this week in Phoenix, Arizona. The event brings together Native people who are dedicated to sustaining and advancing Indigenous culture. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by the first-ever Indigenous Comic-Con in Albuquerque, New Mexico, featuring guests, cosplay, movies, games, and much more. You can get your Indigenerd on November 18th through the 20th. More info and tickets at IndigenousComicCon.com. Support by the University of Tulsa College of Law's online Indian Law Master's Degree program to help you work effectively in Indian Country. Spring application deadline is December 1st. More information at 844-573-3934.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 and a half hour, and you are tuned to the June afternoon here on a great sunny day. Max Press is in the studio with us, with the Chamber of Commerce here to highlight the annual dinner at night in Hollywood. Max, thanks for coming by today.
Thanks, Jeff.
So tell me about the Chamber of Commerce, please.
Well, we have a little over 400 members or so, and business members. We have, some of the largest companies in America are members of the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, and a bunch of really small ones are too. And most of our members are less than 10 employees. You know, they're the Juneau merchants and mom-and-pop businesses that kind of make Juneau tick.
What's your mission?
Well, we represent business and business interests. You know, everybody, employees have unions. We have business have to have a way to collectively kind of make their voice heard, and chambers a great way to do that. I've been involved now on the board for 6 years, and have been really proud that I think we've tried to strike a very kind of embracing tone for all of Juneau's businesses and doing it in a positive, productive way, advocate for businesses and Juneau in general. So,
you're having a fundraising dinner, a night in Hollywood, this weekend.
Right, a night in Hollywood. I did not think up the name, by the way. I'm an accountant, and I'm better off at, adding up the beans and thinking things like that up. So people smarter than me come up with those ideas. But it is a lot of fun. We do this every year. It's our big fundraiser. And we give away a lot of fabulous prizes. We have two sets of two Alaska Airlines tickets, round-trip tickets. We have a set of first-class upgrades for Alaska Airlines. We have a 7-day cruise on Holland America Line that we'll be auctioning off that night. We have, I think, over 80 silent auction items that we'll be doing. We always have a famous dessert auction, as Juneau is a great for its desserts and its food, and we have usually 30 or 40 great dessert items and lots of fun, games and stuff that we'll be using to give away the Alaska Airlines tickets and whatnot. Dinner, of course, Baranoff will be doing an excellent dinner, salmon Wellington and prime rib, potatoes risotto, and it'll be a lot of fun. It's always a great evening.
It's a fundraiser. What do you raise the funds for?
To carry out our mission. We have two big sources of revenue, and one is membership dues, where we bill our members, and then the other is fundraising. And we have several fundraisers, but this is by far and away the big fundraiser for us, and probably represents a very high percentage of our total funds that we bring in from fundraising activities. So it's really important to us too. And, we're expecting and hope for a great turnout. We usually get, 300 people or so that come to this. And so it's a lot of fun.
Standing on Centennial Hall.
Yep. Centennial Hall. The doors open at 6:30. We have, drinks and dancing and starting at 6:30, and folks can go check out all the silent auctions and the dessert items that we have available, and then the fun begins at 7:30. K2's own Ben Brown is our MC, and frequently is, and Ben he's a lot of fun, does a great job, and so he'll be kind of running the event that night.
And it's a Saturday night?
Yep. No, this is Friday night.
Friday night.
Yeah, it's this Friday night. Friday night at 6:30 at Centennial Hall. We still have tickets, although I think they're getting kind of scarce, but we do still have tickets available. And there are chamber board members running around town still trying to sell our big raffle tickets. We have a $10,000 cash raffle ticket thing we do, and I think we're getting kind of low on tickets there, but we have some of those tickets available too. And it's a great way to support Gino and the various things the chamber does. So,
are tickets going to be available at the door?
Yes, they should be, assuming we're not sold out. We normally don't, but there should be tickets available at the door. Yeah.
How much are they?
Well, let's see. You know, that's a very good question, Ben. Jeff, the... I think they're $75, but you know, I'm not sure. We buy a table in our business, and I'm not sure how much individual tickets. Although I think they're $75. That sounds about right. We'll just pretend they're $75.
And you're going to be making a couple of announcements.
Yes, we are. We the chamber dinner every year is when we do our Citizen of the Year and Lifetime Achievement Award winners, and we have those. We don't do Lifetime Achievement every year. It's when we really feel like there's somebody that's, really makes sense to give it to. But we do Citizen of the Year every year. This year we have both, which is great. And they're both, excellent. Once they're announced, everybody will go, oh, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Our Citizen of the Year award winner, I'm very proud of, and it'll be a fun announcement. So.
Well, you can tell me. I won't tell
anybody. Yeah, okay. Yeah, right.
6:30. Doors open Friday night.
Yep. Doors open at 6:30, and we have one wall in there that is full of auction items. The community. It just amazes me. You know, when you reach out in Juneau for an event like this, you have people that are, oh yeah, absolutely, we're happy to give. You know, we have fabulous items. Not only the cruises and the airline tickets, but you know things like office furniture and paintings and all the Juneau stuff. You know, things from the Alaskan Brewery just really great. And I think last I heard we were at about 80 auction items, which must be pretty close to a record. So there's something that interests just about everybody. And so that's really good. And then the desserts, of course, are just about one of my favorite things, getting one of the fabulous desserts we have available and then getting to dance once the dinner's over is always a lot of fun. So.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Tickets are available in advance. Where do they get them?
Well, the tickets are available. If you can go to the Juneau Chamber website and see where you can purchase tickets from. The Chamber office, of course, has them. Any Chamber board members have those available. But the best thing to do would be to go online and Google JuneauChamber.com and you'll find where to get tickets there.
Max Morris, thanks for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, I don't think so. It's always great to get interviewed by Juneau Radio royalty, Jeff. It's good to see you.
Tune to Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio are Marianne Mills and Kim Andrew for the League of Women Voters, here to talk about a fun wine tasting. Thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
So we've had people from League of Women Voters on several times in the past few months, but listeners may not have understood what the League does.
Oh, well, we educate citizens about the issues and how to get involved in government, how to make good decisions, and we just try to get as many people informed as possible and encourage them to participate in the political process.
And I think you could take some pride in the fact that there are 33 1/3% in this last election voters turn out.
Well, that's better than it has been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was great.
Could be even better, though.
Yes. Well, it can be better.
You're having a wine tasting.
Yes. This Friday, everybody's invited to our wine tasting silent auction fundraiser at the Rockwell Gallery downstairs. So that's Friday, October 14th. Starts at 5 p.m., so you can come right after work or, you know, stop in at 5. And it lasts till 7:30 p.m. We're going to have delicious hors d'oeuvres and wine available from the distributors. I don't know, Kim probably wants to credit the distributors.
Yeah, we have two distributors, Southern Glazers Wine and Spirits, and Specialty Imports of Alaska will be there. We also have a long list of auction donators, silent auction donators. Joe McCabe donated a print on glass called Sacred Grove. Oh, you know, we have wine, whale watching trips, a bike tune-up, dinner, you name it, and jewelry. We have a lot of different auction items this year, and so we're really stoked about that.
This is happening on Friday.
This Friday. Everybody's invited. It's not just for women. It's it's for everybody who's age 21 and older.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you do with League of Women Voters when there's not an election coming up on the horizon?
Well, some of our members are especially involved in going into the schools, into the high schools, and we had a special project this year where the middle schoolers took them to the Capitol to learn about how the legislative process works, and that was a new project this past year that was pretty exciting.
I know you work with high schoolers who come in during the election debates themselves.
Right. Just trying to get them excited about learning about the process, get excited about it, and the minute they turn 18, get them to register to vote. Yeah.
Where is it going to be held?
Rockwell Gallery.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
How many members is League of Women Voters having in Juneau?
We have about 120 members, men and women, and we're currently seeking people of all ages and all political persuasions and all ethnicities. We want a diverse membership, and so we have a growing membership in Juneau, and we would like to see that continue. So if anybody's wants to know more about what's involved in being a member, I encourage them to give me a call at 723-0226, and I'd be glad to answer their questions.
Do you have a website?
Yes, JunoLWV.org. You can check us out there, and we also have an option to buy tickets to the wine tasting on our website as well. So,
how can people get tickets if they can't, if they're not available online right away?
They can purchase them at the door also. And this year's theme is suffrage. We decided to celebrate this year, you know, with the upcoming election and the first female presidential candidate. We thought it'd be a good theme. So we're going with that. We're going to have kind of a 1920s vibe. That's the year that suffrage was elected, voted on in the United States. So we'll have Rob Cohen doing music, piano, and it should be a good time. Yeah.
Fine wine.
All right. I want to thank Marianne Mills and Kim Andrew for coming by to discuss Friday's League of Women Voters fundraising wine tasting at the Rockwell. Anything you want to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
We hope everybody will come and visit us then. Thanks.
Yeah.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 12th of October, 2016. The first Oktoberfest in Munich had its origins on this date, 1810, the royal wedding, Ludwig, Crown Prince of Bavaria, marrying Princess Therese of Saxony. They wanted to invite all of Munich to the reception, so they threw a parade and a big party in the field outside the city gates. On the first anniversary, they added an agricultural fair and horse races, and then over the years, other attractions were added. A carousel was brought in 1818, and then a few modest beer stands. But by the end of the century, the little beer stands had been replaced by huge beer tents sponsored by German breweries. Right now, the Bavarian Oktoberfest is the largest festival in the world. It draws some 6 million visitors who drink more than 1 million gallons of beer. It begins actually in the third weekend in September and runs through the first Sunday in October. So it's over now, but there's always next year. It was on this day in 539 BC, Cyrus the Great led his Persian army into Babylon and defeated the Babylonians and became the ruler of a region that now includes Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Israel. It was on this day, 1823, the Scottish chemist Charles Mackintosh sold the first raincoat. He'd been trying to find some use for the coal tar naphtha, which was a byproduct of the gasworks, and discovered that the naphtha would dissolve India rubber, bonding melted rubber to wool and creating a waterproof fabric, from which he made the first raincoats. They smelled bad, they got stiff in cold weather, but they were very popular, and Mackintosh raincoats are still made today. It's the birthday of the poet and translator Robert Fitzgerald, 1910, born Springfield, Illinois, best known for his English translations of Homer's The Odyssey and The Iliad, still held as the standard works for scholars and students. He went to Harvard. He read Eliot's The Wasteland, which he said changed his life. Later, Fitzgerald met Eliot in London, and he got up the courage to give Eliot one of his own poems. Eliot read it for several minutes, and then he looked up and he said, "Is this the best you can do?" Fitzgerald served in the Navy during World War II, and then after the war took his family to Italy, where he began to translate the Odyssey. Here's a poem for today by Susan Heron Sibbett, The Radiation Waiting Room. They bring us to this pastel room, point to the lockers, point to the dressing rooms. It could almost be a gym, only there's a wheelchair, there's health news, there's a complicated flower jigsaw puzzle, there are romance novels to borrow in case you will be returning often. We change into gowns, the tie in the back. Some of us get to keep on our shirts, some our pants. We all wear shoes. Those of us who have come so often wait comfortably, take care of the new ones, offer answers, directions, suggestions. Only we are careful not to say how long we've been coming, or what we have, or what they've done, or are about to do. The Radiation Waiting Room by Susan Heron Sibbett from Great Blue, published by 16 Rivers Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
It's 24 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest in the studio is Jim Clark from the Juneau World Affairs Council. Jim, thanks for coming by today.
Thank you for having us.
So, give us a little update on the World Affairs Council.
Well, the Juneau World Affairs Council is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to bringing interesting speakers to Juneau on international subjects. And really appreciate you having us here today so we can talk about the forum that we are sponsoring next week with the University of Alaska Southeast.
Starts on the 20th?
Starts on Thursday night at the Egan Lecture Hall at 7 o'clock. And we will be having Dr. Natalie Williams kind of set the stage in talking about our topic for this forum, which is migration and refugees and displaced persons. The title of the forum is Human Migration and Refugees, Peril and Hope. And what we are hoping to accomplish with this is talk about refugees landing in Italy and Greece and Turkey, and then the migration routes that they're taking through Europe to get to Northern Europe, in some cases, England. Number of cases, they have family that had preceded them, and they're trying to make it there. And, of course, there's a number of problems in the migration routes, such that various borders have been closed to them. They are in camps in Greece and in Turkey. And what happens to the people in those camps will be part of the subject of what we're doing. We want to talk about, for example, the education of school kids that are in these camps waiting to migrate further north and join their families in Northern Europe. We want to talk a little bit about the impact on the various countries like Germany of having such a large amount of migrants come to Germany and impact the social services there. And we'll have the German consul from San Francisco speaking to that issue. Then there's the issue of countries like Hungary that don't want to take in any migrants and the various reasons that they might have for that, and the deal that Europe has put together with Turkey. How does that play into it, and how do refugees and migrant and the migration impact the European Union? So there's just a whole lot of stuff to discuss here.
It's always amazing how topical your forums are.
Well, the idea, we just felt that as you watch those people come ashore on various TV news programs, you just couldn't help but just say this is something that we really need to address and that people would be interested in it. And to that effect, we've assembled a really good group of academics, for the most part, who teach in these areas at various universities around the United States. And our keynote speaker for the evening at Egan portion on Friday night at 7 o'clock, which will be in the Egan Library, usually because we have more people show up for an evening at Egan, is from the Wilson Center, and he'll be kind of giving what I think will be a tremendous overview of how the folks are impacted by it. The title of his talk is The European Migration Crisis and Policy Responses. So those should be interesting. We have sessions on Friday. We have sessions on Saturday all day, and ending with a panel discussion where six of our speakers will engage on what they think can be done about these about the problem, how to try to alleviate it, at least as far as the refugees are concerned and the host countries are concerned. So our plan is to try to discuss all of that. I really would urge people to come and ask questions and make comments because we're going to have the type of expertise that we don't ordinarily get to assemble here to respond to those issues.
I'm sure they'll be talking about how this all affects Alaska.
Well, so far the United States has taken in a limited number of the folks involved in this, and I frankly don't know how many have shown up in Alaska versus other parts of the country, but they certainly could, and how Alaska is affected would be something that I think could be raised in the questions. We don't have any speakers speaking directly to that, but we have the type of expertise in these speakers that would be able to address that kind of thing, what the impact would be here. And, of course, when we hear about the impact on Germany, we could get an idea of some of the issues that would have to be considered in the, that would be community-type issues, social issues, social economic issues that would need to be thought of in bringing in, large numbers of migrants into Alaska.
What are some of the other panel discussions you're going to be having?
Well, as I said, we'll start off, and I'll just go through these very quickly. The opening discussion by Dr. Natalie Williams will be Migrants, Immigrants, and Refugees, What We Know, What We Don't Know, and Why We Care. The second session will be with Tiffany Bassiono from the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Study, and she'll be talking about a common responsibility, the protection of migrants and refugees in Europe. And she will be really charting the course of what these responsibilities are as the people attempt to move through Europe. Then, as I mentioned, on Friday night, our keynote speaker, Dr. Jim Hollifield from the Wilson Center, will talk about the European migration crisis and policy responses. So he's going to try to bring up some ideas on how to deal with this. On Saturday morning, starting at 9 o'clock in the Egan Lecture Hall, Dr. Pushpa Iyer from the Middlebury Institute of International Studies will talk about identity conflicts, non-state armed groups, civil wars, peace processes, and peace building in post-war societies. That is going to be dealing with the impact of these European issues that affect refugees and migrants. On Saturday, Larry Yunk, who is the senior resettlement office for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees Regional Office in Washington, D.C., will be talking about the plight of refugees and the forcibly displaced, protecting the world's most highly vulnerable persons in the 21st century, how to respond to those most at risk around the world, women, children, families, minorities, and others who have fled human rights violation, persecution, and violent conflicts at a time of global concern for security. Do changing environments require new approaches? Then, as I mentioned, we'll have Stefan Schluter, who is the German Consul General in San Francisco, talking about the social and political challenges of Germany, of Germany's refugee policy, which I think will be very, very interesting for people to hear. Finally, we will have Dr. Rebecca Callahan from the Department of Curriculum and Population Research at the University of Texas in Austin, talking about the educational experiences of refugee immigrant adolescents. And in fact, if anybody watched NPR last night, there was a piece on the impact on Syrian refugees in camps in Greece, and what the Greeks are trying to do to educate those children. So that I think we'll find is a very interesting subject. And then finally, we'll have a panel discussion of all the speakers. I think one has to leave early, but talking about what kind of policy responses could be put together to deal with the problems we'll have discussed in the previous sessions.
You certainly do your homework. Where do you find all these people?
This is always an interesting exercise for these panels. We spend a lot of time consulting with people who know who the experts are in an issue, and then we start contacting people. And I think for every person we get, there's a couple of people that we would like to have that can't do it for whatever reason. But we have been very, very fortunate this year that we've only been turned down by two or three people. We have really gotten the panel that we set out wanting to get. I got my fingers crossed, because ordinarily in this, there'll be somebody that calls you the day before and says, oh my gosh, this, that, or the other thing has happened, and we can't come. But I think that we'll, so far so good, and I think we'll have a very, very interesting array of discussions, which will be made more interesting if we can get a large audience with a lot of questions.
It's free and open to the public.
Oh, yeah, it's free and open to the public, and I would urge everybody to come and participate in as many of the sessions as you can.
Starts on the 20th, it goes the 21st and 22nd at UAS. Jim, thank you for coming down. Is there anything you want to add?
No, I don't. And I really appreciate K2's assistance in getting the word out on this.
If people need more information, is there a website?
It's jwac.org, jwac.org, and all of the information about the speakers and the events is on that website.
Jim, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I need to take this. Sweetie, I can't talk right now. We're at a play. At the theater? I don't know, sweetie. Yes, I'll be home soon. No, nothing bad is going to happen to you, because I know. Because I'm your mother, I know everything.
Perseverance Theater presents Not Medea, a classic tale of modern motherhood, opens October 14th. Preview performances October 11th and 13th. For tickets, visit ptalaska.org, The Jack, Hearthside Books, or call 463-TIXS.
39 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned into a Juno afternoon. Our next guest is Randy Chapp from Junior Jazz and Classics, here to talk about a string workshop which is coming up on October 21st through the 23rd. Reggie, thank you for coming by.
Well, thank you for having me, Jeff.
So before we get too much further, could you give listeners an idea what Juno Jazz and Classics is?
Juno Jazz and Classics is a musical festival, basically, that we put on in May usually. But throughout the year, we do special events, especially in music education and benefit concerts. This is one of our outreach programs for music education for young people.
What age?
It's more about grades 4 through high school. It's more about anyone who's been playing a string instrument for the past 2 years who wants a chance to work with some master teachers we're bringing up from Seattle. Tracy Hellingham has been here before as a master teacher for violin and viola, and we're bringing up Brian Wharton, who is a cellist who also teaches double bass. So the entire string orchestra section will have a master teacher program, and they'll have different groups. They'll have ensembles. They'll get master classes. They'll have group lessons. It's a great opportunity for our string students here in Juneau.
How much room is there for people?
We can take up to 40 students. The cost is for a half day, which is basically for our younger beginner students, is $75. And for the full day, it's $125. The teachers are just fabulous that come up here and do this. Most of the people know Tracy. She's been doing this for several years with us with Juno Jazz and Classics. They have a great opportunity to interact with students their own age they may not know from different schools and have a chance to work together on their music.
It's all happening at the University of Alaska.
It's all happening at the University of Southeast Alaska, October 21st through the 23rd. Scholarships are available. We've been fundraising for it. So we don't want cost to be the reason that these students can't participate. So all they have to do is contact their music teachers, and their music teachers contact me for the scholarship. So we don't want cost to be a reason students don't do this.
Juno Jazz and Classics String Workshop, 21st through the 23rd.
Right, and if they want more information, it's out on our website, jazzandclassics.org, or they can always call me at the office, 463-3378.
Now, when is Jazz and Classics happening?
Jazz and Classics itself is May 5th through May 20th, and we've already got almost all the lineups set. There's just a few spots left to fill in. We're going to start off that very first weekend with a band called The Congress. They are a blues band out of Virginia. They are fabulous. We're so excited to have them coming here. So we'll have a blues dance on Friday night, and then we'll have the blues cruises, very popular, on May 6th. So there, it's just kind of an exciting time. On May 7th, Strings at the Shrine will be happening, and the Vega Quartet is coming back with Zoo Bailey. So that will be a wonderful experience for everyone. The music out there at the Shrine is just fabulous. Exact music I'll have in a few months.
Who else is going to be here?
We're going to have a group called the Defibrillators. They're on an Alaskan tour, and they're going to be happening on Friday, May 12th, as well as Evan Drockman's coming back, Zool Bailey. Our new artistic director, Will Ransom, will also be playing piano, as well as Julie Sharon and Julie Chang. So we'll have 4 different pianists in town during the festival this year, and there'll be some four-handed piano playing for some classical pieces. So it should be very different music than what we've had sometimes in the past. And like I said, Zool's coming back too, so everyone loves to hear Zool Bailey play. He's a wonderful cellist.
And people can get tickets and more information by going to jazzandclassics.org.
We don't have the tickets up yet because we are doing a new ticketing system at the Jack, so the tickets won't be available probably till after the first of the year for the festival. But we also have Swing In the New Year coming up for December 31st. And if everyone wants to meet Will Ransom, he's going to be our new artistic director. He will be in town on January 15th doing a concert called Champagne and Chopin. All those tickets will start going on sale in November.
Reggie, thanks for coming by.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
about 14 minutes before the hour, and you're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. Our next guest is Beth Loudon from Big Brothers Big Sisters. They're having a fundraising luncheon called Dream Big. Beth, thank you for coming down to the station today.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Now tell me about Big Brothers Big Sisters, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Big Brothers Big Sisters is a mentoring organization. We've had a presence in Juneau for a number of years now. Essentially what we do is we take mentors or volunteers in the community, we call them Bigs, and we match them with maybe children who are facing adversity, maybe just need a little bit of an extra support or role model in their life, and these are our littles. So these matches typically either are community-based or they're school-based.
How many matches do you have?
Currently we have 63 matches, so about 126 folk in the program altogether.
And your luncheon is called Dream Big.
It is. It is. So our luncheon is on November 2nd. It's going to be at Centennial Hall, and it's from 12 to 1. It's one of our big fundraising events of the year, and it's really a chance for the Juno community to get to know these matches. They'll hear testimonials from people who have been mentors as well as people who have been mentored, or perhaps parents of the children who have been mentored as well.
Do you know what the menu is?
Yeah, absolutely. Breeze Inn will be catering our event this year, and it'll be a sandwich, a plated lunch this year.
Do you still have two matches going on in the Johnson Youth Center?
Yeah, we have worked with the Johnson Youth Center for a long time now. I don't believe we have current matches at the Johnson Youth Center, but we do partner with them very closely, and I believe they will have a presence at the event this year.
How can people get tickets to the Dream Big Luncheon?
Absolutely. If people are interested in attending the Dream Big Luncheon, they are welcome to contact myself, Beth Loudon. You can call me at 586-3350. There's also information on our website. That's www.bbbsak.org.
Well, thank you for coming in, Beth. Anything you'd like to add that I might have forgotten to ask?
I think that is it. Thank you so much.
This is Bird Note. Many consider ravens among the most intelligent of birds. A story told by Bird Note listener Gary Cummins gives us further reason to believe. When I was deputy superintendent at Grand Canyon National Park, my job had the side benefit of watching ravens working to outsmart everything and everyone in their domain. My wife and I had a Siberian husky named Tasha. Tasha watched carefully over her stash of bones in our fenced yard. When two nearby ravens saw her with a tasty bone, they teamed up on her. One raven landed in the yard, well away from Tasha and the bone. It acted distressed or injured, hopping slowly and seemingly ignoring the dog. Tasha, seeing the distressed raven, went into her wolf-like stalking mode, creeping up on the raven while staying low to the ground. Just as Tasha was ready to pounce, the raven flew up into a tree. At that instant, the second raven swooped in, grabbed the bone in its beak, then flew up and dropped the bone just beyond the fence. Now both ravens took their sweet time picking clean the bone, while Tasha barked, howled, and threw herself against the fence. The thieving ravens acted as if poor Tasha wasn't even there. Thanks, Gary. Good story. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
What we most often hear is bad news about our teens. That alters what we know is true. Most Alaska teenagers are doing positive things. They're volunteers, role models, and much more. Spirit of Youth tells these stories.
David Parker is 19 years old, and he lives in Fairbanks. He studies filmmaking and theater at UAF. And he's a great friend, someone who's shown he can be counted on when there's a need. Recently, David got a scary phone call. A friend of his, whose identity he wants to protect, was really upset. A little later, David got a text from that person that he didn't understand. "I'm so sorry," it said. When David asked why, the friend explained that he'd just taken steps to commit suicide. David and his mother rushed to his friend's house.
When we got there, we let them right into the car, and took them right to the hospital.
David stayed with his friend at the hospital for hours, and they talked together and to doctors. His friend was able to feel calmed.
I felt I did what I had to do.
David points out that life in Alaska isn't how it can seem on reality TV, and that people here have real struggles.
I mean, especially if someone like texts you saying I'm going to kill myself or something, even if they say that in a joking way, I never take it as a joke. Since what happened, I pretty much just, you know, say, are you doing all right? I try to be there for them, and if they are having an issue, I try to help them out with it. It's an important thing to talk about, and nobody really does.
But David is. He says he and some other film students are working on a documentary this year that deals with suicide, depression, and other issues. I'm Shannon Sheehy.
Do you know of a teenager making a difference where you live? Take some time right now to nominate them for Spirit of Youth. Get more information at spiritofyouth.org.
Listen to this story again at spiritofyouth.org.
Hi, this is Terry Tibbett, and I'd like to invite you to my concert and live TV recording on Friday, October 21st at KTOO. I'll play original material inspired by a life of performing, teaching, and working in Alaska. At the concert, I'll be joined by my friends and local musicians for the one-hour performance starting at 7 p.m. on Friday, October 21st at 360 in the KTOO building. Admission is free.
The forecast for tonight, partly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 30 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, mostly sunny with high temperatures near 46 degrees. Thursday night, partly cloudy skies with low temperatures of 35 degrees. Friday, mostly sunny with high temperatures near 45 degrees.